This is Terry Crosby.
Andy Steiger.
Steve Kim.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. We're back again. Thank you for joining us again, listeners.
The trio is back. Terry's going a million miles an hour today. He's teaching later.
We had thinking series last night here at the church, so doing that.
How did that go?
Yeah, it went well. I mean, I think they had probably about 86 people out last night. So
that's great. That's really good. One of the things I'm amazed by is the thinking series continues to be hosted around the country. We are continually shipping out books to places across Canada and the United States. A lot of people in Virginia, intriguingly enough. I'd like to know why that is. But people in Virginia particularly like the Thinking Series. What a great way to engage with people. And if we could just actually make a quick plug about that. Mm-hmm. We started this Thinking Series recently here. We haven't done one for a little while, so we kicked one off. And I was just so impressed each time at the number of non-Christians that will come out to these things.
Yeah.
So listen, if you are listening to this podcast and you're thinking, man, I want to engage in my community and my church with non-Christians, host a thinking series. Every time we do it, many, many come out. I don't know the exact number, but there must have been at least 15 of those 80 that were non-Christians, at least.
Yeah.
I often tell the story of that one time when we did it at that coffee shop in Port Moody, just outside of Vancouver, a very secular place.
Yeah.
And man, the attendance there was amazing. I mean, a coffee shop that could fit maybe 30 people, some 60 people were in there, and people were just coming in off the streets, grabbing a drink, listening to what you were talking about, Andy, and then they just stayed.
Yeah.
And so it just goes to show that people are actually interested in talking about these issues. And I find that to be the case, especially in places where Christianity is relatively weaker, secularism is relatively stronger.
Mm-hmm. And every year when we have baptisms here at Northview, we will hear testimony of, I started attending because of the Thinking Series, got me started, and is a part of their testimony every year. So be encouraged if you're wanting to engage with people, great way to do it. But Terry, as busy as you've been, I'm sure you've had time to dig around in the internet.
A little bit of digging. This one article says this Key West cemetery might have the world's funniest gravestones. So there's a cemetery in Key West, and a lot of the people that have passed on and gone on put some interesting things on their gravestones. So there was one of the headstones was from a local hypochondriac, B.P. Pearls Roberts. Her famous epitaph comically quips, "I told you I was sick." Another one said, "I'm just resting my eyes." Another one said, "I've always dreamed of owning a small piece in Key West."
Wow.
So these people, you know, had a comedic aspect right till the end.
I guess it's kind of interesting, hey, to actually give thought to what your final text will be, you know, whatever can fit onto a gravestone. But interestingly enough, have you noticed that there is a digital gravestone as well, or imprint that people make that is kind of weird? And that is, when people pass away, basically whatever their last post on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, it just becomes immortalized on the web. And it's just interesting each year with different friends of mine who've passed away, and when their birthday comes around and they come back up on your feed, and you're like, oh yeah, so-and-so died, it's his birthday. And you'll go, maybe you go onto Facebook and see that person, and people will have left stuff on their, you know, now Facebook gravestone, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Have you guys come across this?
I haven't, actually. I don't think I've noticed that at all.
Steve?
Yeah. In fact, we had a friend a number of years ago. One of my wife's close childhood friends actually passed away. And I don't think she was trying to make sort of a digital gravestone kind of thing, but that was the natural connection I guess people had to her. So people were leaving comments left, right, and center as though she was still there or saying their last kind of goodbyes, that sort of a thing.
One of the new ones, we don't have time to get into this. Maybe this will be for another podcast, is a new thing that's been being developed is people taking old posts from, say, a parent or a friend, and then using those so that you can create a chat bot so that you can still chat with your friend
virtually.
That the whatever this chat bot does is going to use the same sort of vocabulary and lingo or whatever. Anyway, moving on, we got some important stuff to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk today with regards to a story that broke last Saturday on January 19th. And it took place at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. So initially, there just about every news outlet ran about a 30-second clip that looked like a teenager boy confronting a First Nations elder playing a drum and basically smirking at him at that time. So that's the initial clip that got played.
I remember for me, I don't spend a lot of time online, but I did notice one thing and I was confused by it. I didn't realize that this had escalated into an outrage. And so when I first saw it, I was a little confused, but...
Yeah, I mean, since that time, we're 4 days later, and the story has gotten a lot wider.
Yeah.
And so the people involved in this was that one boy on the clip was called Nick Sadman, and some schoolmates that were behind him from Covington Catholic School. The Indigenous elder, he was a Vietnam War veteran. His name is Nathan Phillips. And just within the last couple of days, another videos have come to light of a guy called Chief Ephraim Israel. He comes from an organization called the House of Israel.
If we had time to delve down that rabbit hole, which I probably wouldn't,
yeah,
there's some really weird stuff going on there.
Yeah, there is. But in the first couple of days, I mean, the kids were vilified over the media. One quote was said this: these teenage monsters, these remorseful thugs from our back provinces, were living examples of all that is rotten and immoral about America. So there was a lot of harsh things said about the kids, the school. There was death threats coming to the school.
There were calls to dox them. In fact, their personal information, at least for some of them, did get out, and they're getting all kinds of death threats and whatnot. And the school even closed down.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so much so that they closed the
school. Just opened today, they said.
The school. Which is just unreal, right? Because as I'm digging deeper into this whole thing for this podcast, normally I wouldn't dig into these issues. But I was actually saying to Terry and to Steve, sometimes doing this podcast is painful for the soul, you know, as you dig into these issues. But we want to talk about this because it's important. But it's interesting as we were digging into it, you know, that they quite quickly began to dig into people's past. So it just gets outlandish just to begin with this conversation, such as this Mr. Phillips, as though the students knew that this was a Vietnam War veteran, right? And then they go into the Catholic school and then they begin to dig into Catholic school and look for anything that they can find negative about that school to begin to parade that out.
Yeah.
And everything is done in such a way to communicate a certain narrative. And this is really key about what's going on here. And it just needs to be discussed.
And just one piece to the Nathan Sandman and his classmates. They were there for March for Life and an anti-abortion rally. So that was their purpose of being there. Yep. I'm not sure why Nathan Phillips was there.
I think he was there for the March for Indigenous Peoples or something like that. There was a separate kind of a rally that was happening around the same time. And I think that's why he was there.
And to my knowledge, he's quite well known for these sorts of rallies. Now, what I think is really important to talk about with what's happening here is that in the past, we are very familiar with the dehumanization that has taken place in things like Nazi Germany, Rwanda, Cambodia, you know, you name it. And we're all familiar with the tactic that's employed in which violent acts are instigated through, and that's propaganda. And one of the things that I think is so fascinating and so important about talking about this is when you begin to steer a narrative in the direction that you want it to be steered, you begin to participate in propaganda. And what made me so frustrated as I dug into this is to go from media site and to watch as these well-educated journalists were participating in the making of propaganda as they were taking a narrative that they wanted to be true. Now, this is critical to understand. They wanted a specific aspect of this confrontation to be true, and a lot of it had to do with President Trump and the fact that this kid's wearing a MAGA hat, right? Make America great again. And then using that to communicate their agenda with what's taking place here. That is good old-fashioned propaganda.
And that narrative changed at times as well, in the sense that as more information came out, they had to adjust their narrative, but they still wanted to keep it negative. So there's one lady, Christine Powers. I mean, in the end, after all these other videos came out, the boys were still guilty of disrespecting an indigenous elder. Mm-hmm. I mean, they still wanted to force right. it in a direction that they were thinking.
Oh, without question. And you could tell that the main narrative that I saw wanting to steer this conversation towards is, yeah, A, you know, look at these students and how disrespectful they were to the indigenous people, to their elders. But then it was always steered back to President Trump. It was always steered back, you know, politically. Look at where they're being motivated. Look at the sorts of things that are being communicated to them. And they're just acting out from what they're seeing, you know, President Trump or whatever doing.
Well, Trump's hat's got a lot of press on this one.
Right. Which again, is so funny because I watched so many reports that said this was a mob. Right. Notice the kind of terminology that's being used. That this is a quote, you know, a mob all wearing MAGA hats. Now, if you watch the video, there are a few students wearing those hats. Are they all wearing those hats? No. Is this a mob? No, these are students, from what I understood, that were just together waiting for the bus to come. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure, but that's what I hear.
Yeah, they were basically on something of a field trip, right? They're from Kentucky and they're in DC to attend the rally, March for Life. And they were on their way back, apparently, and they were just waiting for the bus or something like that. That's where this started breaking out, right? When I look at it, I see just a really sad case of miscommunication all around.
But that's what I'm saying, though, Steve, is this is more than this is purposeful miscommunication.
Right. Mm-hmm. Also, what I've seen is that the media and people in general kind of misconstrued what happened there. From what I could see, to my knowledge, what happened was there were the Black Hebrew Israelites who were hurling all kinds of insults at these schoolboys, you know, calling them incest kids and, you know, some very choice words being thrown at them.
By the way, there's other videos too that it just gets even worse from there. So if you watch more videos, you see more of the insults, even telling them to go do school shootings and lots of other things. So horrible stuff that was being said to these students.
So what happened was one of the students apparently asked the chaperone, you know, can we do the school chant as a way to kind of counteract these negative things that were being said about them. And so they started doing, you know, the school spirit chant like, you know, you would do at a sports event. And one of the students is seen, you know, taking the shirt off and doing the haka, right? Like the Maori tribe war dance, that sort of thing. And from what I could tell, the other side construed that as saying something really racist, like build that wall.
Yeah, it was Phillips who was saying that they were chanting build the wall. But if you watch the video, there's no chanting of build the wall. You have the students who are standing there waiting for the bus. And then you've got Phillips, who's leading a group of indigenous and these Black Israelites. They're coming directly to the students. And the students then begin to part as Phillips walks through them.
Yeah, they were approached by Phillips and his group. So then Nathan Phillips goes directly to Nick Zenman, and he starts singing this prayer song. Now, here's the interesting thing that I heard from a friend of mine who has a First Nations background, somebody that I went to school with. And she said, when an elder is singing a prayer song over you, that's a sign that he is actually trying to diffuse tension. of course, Nick Sandman, he doesn't know this, right? So he takes this as aggression. And what he wants to do is, I'm just going to stand my ground here. I don't even know what to do, but I'm just going to smile at this person as a way of saying, this is all you're going to get out from me. Like, I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to stand here peacefully and show you that I am not going to fight you. Now, that smile then gets misinterpreted as this smirk showing disrespect to the elder. And so it's funny that there is this cultural clash that's happening and people just misunderstand on all sides.
Also, I mean, with the amount of video that was taken, it seems that just about anybody could flip it their way. You know what I mean?
Without question. I watched the longer video.
There's one that's like 2 hours long, isn't there?
When you watch the other videos, what you see is a protest that's taking place, something that happens all the time, no big deal of what's actually taking place. When you hear the insults, though, that are being said, that's out of control. And in some ways, I'm surprised that the students weren't removed from the situation earlier, because I could have seen that becoming violent from the other side, from what the horrible things that were being said to them. At the same time, I couldn't help but think, from a school's perspective, what a great experience for them on Martin Luther King Day, right? To understand the political process of what happens when you go to places like the Lincoln Memorial. That's why I don't think it's a problem, by the way, that they're wearing MAGA hats. They're in Washington on a field trip with regards to politics. It's an appropriate place for them to show support for a political party.
And you might run into people that don't agree with you.
Yeah.
So how do we...
Which is exactly what they did. They found a group that didn't agree with them. And there was no violence on either side.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I would fault the other side just for the fact of the insults that were said. But I think that this whole issue of what took place there was just a common everyday experience in the realm of disagreeing with human beings. One of the reasons I want to talk about this, because I think we need to think more deeply about this, is that when you watch something online, which is clearly what happened on these news agencies, they saw something online that told a narrative that they wanted to be true. They wanted to paint that student wearing that hat in that kind of light. So instead of doing their due diligence to see what really took place, they were quite happy to move that narrative ahead, not caring about that student or that school or the truth of what actually took place. And this is why I come back to propaganda. Their desire was to push a certain narrative that they wanted to be correct.
Well, you certainly question, because if there is 2 hours of video, which I did not watch, I might have saw a few videos, why pick out this 30-second clip, right?
Right. One of the things that's unbelievable about this is we've come so far as a culture that at the end of the day, this student and his family had to hire a PR firm to try to deal with this so that this kid's life wasn't going to be ruined over this video that was posted online and used by different media outlets to push their particular narrative.
Thank goodness, he's 16 years old.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we are as a culture right now. And one of the things that concerns me that comes back to, we need to talk about this, and I think it's fitting that this happened on Martin Luther King Day, is we have to talk about racism. We have to talk about dehumanization and the ways in which it's being communicated. And you know what? Truthfully, shame on these news agencies and these journalists. They should be ashamed of what they've done, and they need to take a deep look into our history of the sorts of ways in which propaganda was pushed and used in the past and how that leads to violence.
Yeah. It was reported that Laura Wagner didn't even watch any of the tape, but she vilified the kids. She said it was a frothing mass of MAGNA youth, you know, frenzied and yelling out of control. And she didn't even view any of the video.
And then to be so ignorant to not think that that is going to lead to violence, you know. And it did. These students couldn't even go to school. And we're lucky that that's as far as it's gotten thus far. But my point is, and I want to keep coming back to, is if this is allowed to continue, it will lead to greater and greater violence. Now, we're already seeing violence with organizations like Antifa already. Now, in the past, though, it was like, oh, Antifa, you know, as long as you're only going to punch a Nazi, you know, we're okay with that. But now all of a sudden, no, who's going to get punched is becoming a whole lot wider. And now it's, you know, a 16-year-old wearing a MAGA hat. Now that's who needs to be fearful for their lives.
Mm-hmm. I find it really ironic that this happens, you know, right around the time we're celebrating the man who was fighting against dehumanization.
And cost him his life.
Yeah. And what I find really ironic is in order to fight dehumanization, in order to kind of carry on his legacy, we are using dehumanizing tactics. I mean, that quotation that you cited, Terry, from Laura Wagner. Can you read that one more time for me?
Laura Wagner described the boy's behavior as a radically charged frenzy of barely restrained violence committed by a frothing mass of mega youth, frenzied and yelling out of control.
That is a very demeaning description of them. I mean, by any journalistic standards, you read something like that and you go, wow, there's bias. If this is not biased, I don't know what is. That kind of demeaning description of these students, I find dehumanizing. Description of, you know, them frothing and all that kind of stuff. It's just,
and what you find then is at the end of the day, when you're using that sort of rhetoric, all you care about is likes. At the end of the day, it's all about how many people have viewed my content. And I no longer care about the facts. I mean, so many of the different journalists that I heard, none of them had the facts straight. I didn't even get a sense that they cared about the facts, but it was all about how can I, you know, speak in such a way to get more people to listen to me. Or, and this is the big one, and this is where I think social media right now is one of the greatest tools of dehumanization, and I don't think that we really saw that coming, and it's becoming more and more of an echo chamber. So what happens then is you begin to feed yourself through these algorithms propaganda that is, again, feeding your stereotypes and what you want to be true. Mm-hmm. This is why right now I think Jesus's parable of the Good Samaritan is such a valuable lesson for people to just ponder. Here is a man, a teacher of the law, that wants to justify who he needs to love and who he doesn't need to love. And what does Jesus do? He tells him a story that goes against what he wants to be true. You see, he would like to hear Jesus tell him a story about how it was a Samaritan that kept walking past, you know, that guy on the side of the street that needed help. Yeah, because those dirty half-breeds, that's what they're like, you know, but it was the priest who came to the man's aid. And Jesus tells him a different story. He tells him the story he doesn't want to hear about a good Samaritan that comes to the man's aid while the priest keeps on walking. And Jesus's desire for all of us is to come and to break up in our worldview those desires to justify not loving certain people, and that we have a responsibility, particularly as Christians, to humanize all people and to love all people. And in fact, Jesus says, this is how you'll know that you're one of my students, in fact, is that you love people. And I got to tell you, when I was watching these black Israelites and the things that they're saying, I'm like, well, I clearly know where they stand, that, and it's not with Jesus. Because if somebody who follows Jesus does not speak to human beings like that.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a really good opportunity for us to take a step back and think about the people that we perhaps not even consciously dehumanizing, right? I know for a lot of people around me, it's really easy to dehumanize certain politicians, let's say. I am in Alberta, you know, and Alberta being a very conservative kind of a province overall, people like to badmouth Justin Trudeau all the time. You know, I may not agree with all of his policies and things like that, and I may find it difficult to stand some of the things that he says. But one thing that I'm trying to be very careful of is not reducing him just down to his policies that mm-hmm. I disagree with.
That he's
he
a
is
human
more
being.
Than that. Right. He has a family. He has a name. He has a history. He has feelings. But if you were to listen to some people talk around me, I was like, I get really uncomfortable sometimes. And the same goes for, you know, the other side, too. You know, some friends who are very much leaning to the other side. the kinds of things that they say about, say, Andrew Scheer, you know, and we see this all happening all the time down in the United States, where things seem even more polarized than in Canada, right? And it doesn't just have to stay with politics. I mean, there might be certain people in your life whom you disagree with on certain issues, like social hot button issues, like racism, abortion, immigration, whatever it might be. And the temptation is reduce that person to that person's ideas, which I reject. And then I reject the person along with the ideas. And that is a trap that we really need to be careful to avoid. If I may add one more thing. See, this is what I'm seeing is that people are generally very quick to assume the worst in the other person with whom they disagree. And so for example, say a very diehard pro-lifer looks at somebody who's pro-choice and says, oh, you just want to kill babies. I'm like, no. When I talk to pro-choicers, one of the things that I always do is establish common grounds. You do care about women's rights. You know, so I try to look at it in a more positive way rather than you are into killing babies. And we could flip that too, right? A pro-choicer might say to me, you're against women's rights. I'm like, no, it's difficult enough to talk to each other when we disagree. Let's assume the best in people. And one thing that I found helpful is when I talk to people, you know, say on social media or something like that, especially where you can't actually see the person face to face, is consciously try to imagine that person giving me a genuine smile. For some reason, when I think in those ways, when I picture that person giving me a genuine smile and say even giving me a handshake or something like that, all of a sudden, my attitude changes a little bit as I talk to this person. I actually want to get along with this person a little bit more and try to establish more common grounds and things like that. So I don't know what you're like when you talk to people, but if that helps you, great.
You know, Steve, I think this is such an important point. As I think about, you know, myself and us as a culture, and I think about who are the types of people that we tend to justify not wanting to love. And I think to myself, if Jesus were to tell me the parable of the good such and such, you know, who would he tell me was the good person, right? I mean, who's the person I tend to want to justify not loving? And I think, Steve, as I think more and more about this and where we are as a culture, the person that we tend to justify not loving is the person in whom we disagree with. And I am seeing that more and more, that we have really lost sight of how I can love somebody and both disagree with them at the same time, that these two things are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, and this is something a lot of people think about, in fact, disagreeing with somebody can be the most loving thing that you can do at times, right? A lot of people have this really false understanding that in order to love somebody, you need to agree with them. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely not the case. We can deeply disagree and profoundly love at the same time, and must do so, especially in the face of the sorts of dehumanizing rhetoric that we're seeing and the sorts of propaganda that are being motivated for different political agendas that we're seeing on both sides. And I hope that comes across clear in our podcast today. I am not saying that this is a one-sided issue. I'm saying we're all doing this.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, guys. I think that's a great part to stop on. We appreciate you joining us again, listeners. This is a current event, current issue, and we enjoy doing these once in a while as much as we can.
When the stars align and we're able to do it.
Like this morning, Andy sent this article. So, yeah, we jumped on it and we brought it to you today. So, thanks for joining us, listeners. The AC Podcast is a Ministry of Apologetics Canada. We'll come back next week with more things to think about.